This is a takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
Chuck Berry, Aretha Franklin, Ella Fitzgerald, and Louis Armstrong. Those were just a handful of the legendary musicians who had master recordings destroyed 11 years ago in a fire at Universal Studios.
Tonight, the massive day-long fire that destroyed part of Universal Studios' backlot has finally been reduced to smoking rubble.
The blaze destroyed some familiar movie sets and wiped out thousands of videos, but Universal officials say everything that was destroyed can either be replaced or rebuilt.
At the time of the fire, a representative for Universal Music Group told Deadline.com, quote, there was little loss from UMG's fault. But this week, new reporting from Jody Rosen of the New York Times revealed that over 100,000 recordings, encompassing roughly 500,000 songs, were destroyed in the incident. And that doesn't mean all of these songs are gone for good. You can probably find many of them on YouTube or Spotify. But the master tapes represent the highest quality files of some of these recordings. And their loss underscores the challenges of preserving audio in the 21st century. Andy Lancet knows a thing or two about preservation. He's the director of archives at New York Public Radio, which includes us here at WNYC. Hi, Andy. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello.
So what's a master recording, Andy?
A master recording is your first original take. It's what's laid down in the studio or taken, or maybe even taken off the air. It may be the only copy you have. It's really the unique item.
And why is it so important to preserve the quote-unquote master recording in this era of remixes and re-records and digital? Like, why is that recording so critical?
Because that recording has everything that was available at the time it was originally made. What you often hear from the web or recordings elsewhere are MP3 copies, let us say. Those are often lossy files, as opposed to lossless files in the digital age. That means something's missing from them. From the analog point of view, it's really the pristine first copy. If you make a copy of an analog copy using analog equipment, it's like a photocopy of a photocopy. There's something lost by the second, third, fourth generation. So you really want to go with that number one copy, the master.
Tell us a little bit about the collection that you oversee here at New York Public Radio. How far does it date back, and what are some of the different formats that you're working on preserving?
Well, we have every format pretty much used since the 1930s, except cylinder and wire. Of course, the wire came a little later in the 40s, and cylinder was prior to. So that means lacquer discs. Those lacquer discs can either be aluminum or glass-based. Certainly a lot of quarter-inch reel-to-reel tape that starts off as acetate and goes to polyester and mylar. Then there's back-coated polyester. There's VHS tape. There's F1 beta tapes. There's a whole array of items, CDR, mini disc, etc. And that collection spans, the earliest item we have goes back to 1927, actually. Lindbergh being welcomed on the steps of City Hall by Mayor Walker.
Present to Colonel Lindbergh the Medal of Valor of the City of New York.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Lindy has now got the Medal of Valor of the City of New York pinned on him by the Honorable James J. Walker, and they are now shaking hands. The Honorable Grover A. Whalen.
We have a clip of the folk singer Woody Guthrie performing on WNYC in 1940. Let's take a listen.
Tom Joad got out of that old McAllister pen. There he got his parole after 4 long years on a man-killing charge. Tom Joad come a-walking down the road, poor boy. Tom Joad come a-walking down the road.
Andy, how did this file get preserved so that we're still able to listen to it today?
Okay, this particular recording came from a 16-inch lacquer transcription disc. If you consider your average record, LP record is 12 inches in diameter, this is a bit bigger, 16 inches. It runs at 33 and a third and gets about 15 minutes a side. Now, this, again, is a lacquer disc, which means in this case, it's actually an aluminum disc with a nitrocellulose acetate coating, and it was actually cut on a record lathe in the studio at the time of the broadcast. So it is a live air check. In this case, it was a Lead Belly's regular 15-minute show on WNYC. Now, this disc needs to be stored properly in proper temperature humidity conditions. It needs to be cleaned properly. These discs develop what is called a palmitic acid coating after a certain amount of time, and that needs to be cleaned off. And then you have to play it back on a turntable that'll accommodate a disc of that size with the proper size stylus, because you want the stylus to fit in the groove snugly, because you want to capture all that sonic information. You don't want it bouncing around, giving you extra hissing or static. And in this case, too, we're making an archival transfer. So if there are ticks and pops and clicks that can't be removed by physical cleaning, we leave them in there. That's part of the original recording as it currently exists. And if an engineer wants to do some signal processing later, they always have that original baseline to go back to.
Do events like what happened at Universal concern you about the future of audio preservation in general? Do you think there's enough being done to preserve these archives, or do you think that that's just sort of a one-off?
No, it's very concerning. It's a really sad story, and it's a real concern. Well, obviously, from the commercial point of view, it's certainly an issue in the radio world, because commercial radio stations notoriously for years actually threw away a lot of their recordings and collections. WNYC is one of the few places in the country where we have a sizable public radio collection. A lot of material just wasn't saved, and others were not saved in the best conditions.
Andy Lancet is the Director of Archives at New York Public Radio. Andy, thank you.
Thank you.
And just to make sure, we are going to archive this segment, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Do you have something from your personal archive that's especially important to preserve?
Hi, my name is Jessica, and I'm calling from Seattle, Washington. My favorite item from my personal archive is my great-great-great-grandmother's engagement ring. And the best way that I preserve it is simply by wearing it. I think that items like that are meant to be worn and meant to live.
Josh Lamont in North San Jose. I keep a photo of Mom's wedding day, 19 years old in 1973, because it just reminds me everything of who she was, and I see myself and who I want to be looking at it.
My name is Darlene. I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. My favorite personal archive is a necklace that contains the hair and ashes of my Irish setter, Oliver. I only had Oliver for 3.5 months, but he stole my heart. The hair and ashes were laid in acrylic by a wonderful woman in Montreal. I wear the necklace every day.
Hi, it's Barbara McIver. I'm calling from Red Bluff, California, up in the northern Sacramento Valley. I have a framed poster that just gets dearer to me as time goes by. It's a poster signed by Fred Rogers. It's inscribed "For the McIver Family, with kindest regards, Mr. Rogers, 1990. It graces our dining room table, and it's definitely what I would grab on the way out, given a home emergency.
Hi, this is Sandy calling from Auburn, Massachusetts. My favorite archive item is a photo of our daughter on the day we first held her when we adopted her from China. She and my husband are on the hotel room floor, and our 9-month-old reached out to pinch the cheek of this new person in her life. We have digital copies on an external hard drive and on our computers, and a book of her first year published on an internet photo site. I still feel the awe and joy of that day every time I look at that photo.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.